It's a bird. It's a plane. It's a drone. The skies are changing. What drone owners and the rest of us need to know. Drones are expected to be one of the hottest holiday gifts this season, and that means many first-time drone pilots will be outside playing with their new toys. Drones already have many industrial, safety, and scientific applications. Realtors, surveyors, geologists, pipeline inspectors, marine biologists, filmmakers, and more are among the professionals who have come to depend on drone use. But not everyone is happy with them. There are those worried about the invasion of privacy and others about aviation safety. And the laws about drones and drone use are evolving. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll get up to date on the world of drones. What are your questions about them? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Drones. Maybe you've seen them hovering around a scenic spot in the state, or perhaps you've heard them buzzing around your neighborhood. Drones are certain to be a big ticket item this holiday season. What does that mean? Today, we are going to discuss what you need to know about drones before you decide to purchase one, or if your neighbor purchases one. In joining me in our studio, Mike Bossy, chair of the construction practice group at Bernstein Scher and team lead for the drone law team. He received his JD from the University of Maine. Jason Levasseur. Am I pronouncing that right, Jason?
Levasseur.
Levasseur. I'm sorry I didn't ask before the program. Jason Levasseur, an IT training specialist, also with Bernstein Scher. He's a personal drone operator and became involved with drones through his videography. He brings the perspective of drone consultant and operator to the drone team. And Michael Sosnowski, did I pronounce it right?
Absolutely.
With Maine Home Connection, a residential brokerage company based in Portland that uses drones for aerial photography. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about drones? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Mike Bossy, I'm going to start with a very basic question. What is a drone? How is it different than a remote-controlled airplane? And when we're talking about drones in today's program, I want to make clear we're talking about either consumer drones, something you might receive as a gift for Christmas, or a drone used in a small business. A surveyor might use a drone. We're not talking about military drones in today's conversation. That's maybe a topic for another day. So, Mike, what is a drone? How is it different than what we all grew up with a handheld antenna?
Sure. Thanks, Jennifer. And thanks for having us back. I never thought I'd be a repeat performer on a radio show, so thanks for having us back. So two ways to think about drones are, one, that they are flying robots, in essence. So if years ago when we were kids, we got a robot that walked across the floor. When you put batteries in it, this one flies. And then the second way, the more technical way to think about it, is that it is an unmanned aircraft system. And so from the FAA's perspective, a drone is an aircraft just like the 747 that you fly on. And although the regulations are somewhat different, the FAA considers it to be an aircraft under their governance.
Okay. So, Jason, I'm going to ask you about different kind of drones. Quickly this morning, I went on Amazon.com. I typed in drone. I got everything from something that cost $16 to something that cost several thousand dollars. Give us sort of the basics. They're gyrocopters. What are the different kinds? What do they do? What are their capacities?
So they're multi-rotors. Well, some of them are multi-rotors, but the unmanned aerial vehicle is basically what the FAA refers it to. You can have minimal as four, which is a quadcopter, which is four propellers, all the way up to six or more propellers. The more propellers, probably the more expensive, the more load it can carry, whether you're doing a large camera or you're actually delivering something. But the most common that you can buy in a retail store is a quadcopter, which is four.
A quadcopter. So it has four different propellers, and those enable it to hover?
Correct.
Okay. And where are we talking? What's a price point if somebody wants to buy their teenager, their spouse, something kind of fun to do, videos when they go on trips, you know, and want to show the beautiful mountains they're visiting, but, you know, don't want to spend too much money. What's a reasonable price point for a decent drone with a video camera?
With a video camera, you can go anywhere from $100 to $1,000 and get somewhat decent with very advanced technology. You can spend as much as you want, as you said earlier, but I think you can go online right now or Best Buy, and you can probably find a decent drone with a camera for $100. There's also a lot of toy drones, which, you know, Star Wars is a big thing right now. There actually is a lot of Star Wars-related drones that you can buy for $30 all the way up to $100 as well, just to play around your house.
So lots of little kids are going to be getting those. And do those – well, maybe I'll ask that in just a minute. But a question we need to ask is, do those have to obey by the same rules as a more powerful drone that can go higher? So we'll come back to you, Mike Bossy. But I want to get to Michael Sosnowski. How does your company use drones? And when did you start?
Hi, Jennifer. We started using drones probably within the last year.
Okay.
And it was a kind of like an evolution of what our company was known for, because we've always been, we're a small boutique real estate company. We only have a dozen agents, but we've always been really well known for high quality photography and for other aspects of video, where we have actually actors performing things and houses and out showing stuff. And it's really like an HGTV type of thing. So then we started to think, how do we take it to the next level? And that's how we got into drones. And we started with just some very simple up and over the house, you know, just trying to get a quick view of it, to where we've been putting together some videos lately that are all about the local area. Flying all around Portland, all the way down to Old Orchard Beach, up to Cumberland, and then we do all the editing in-house. So it's really been it's been fun, because it's no one else locally is doing it at this level, and it's hard. But at the end of the day, our clients, I mean, I think they don't want to move after they look at some of the video work that we do.
So what have you learned in the past year of using drones? Have you have you crashed a drone into a place that you maybe didn't want to crash it? Have you had to get insurance to cover?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of insurance and things like that. One thing I learned, that it's way harder to do than you might think in terms of getting good.
As far as piloting the drone and getting good pictures?
One thing is to get good pictures, because they almost automatically will take a good shot that you can edit later. But just to get the smoothness and the look and the feel for what you're trying to accomplish is way harder than I thought. And so it requires a lot of practice. Anybody who flies a drone and says they never crashed is not being truthful. there's levels of crash. There's fatal crash, and then there's, oh my God, I can recover from this.
Right. And there's crashing into the really expensive car parked in the driveway.
No, not that one yet.
Okay.
not yet anyway.
Okay, Mike Bossy, I want to come back to regulations. If you get your kid a Star Wars drone for Christmas, do you have to call the Portland Jetport Tower if you're going to fly that drone?
If it's over 0.55 pounds and you're within 5 miles of the airport, you need to have permission from the airport. You actually can do it now. I haven't tried to do it, but you both can get an app on your phone.
We actually use that app.
Yeah.
And it does,
or you can go to the FAA website.
And it does kind of work.
It does kind of work. I remember last year you were talking about, it's getting there. So you get an app on your phone. Can you say what the app is?
Yeah, it's Before You Fly. I don't know if you're using that one as well.
Before You Fly. Okay,
Before
I'm going to write that down.
Before You Fly is the app, and it's also a website, beforeyoufly.gov, I think it is.
Right. Okay. We'll put that on our MPBN Main Calling Facebook page, because that's important information. So that's one of the rules that people need to know, Mike Bossy. They need to know that if you're within, did you just say a half a mile of an airport?
5 miles of the airport.
5 miles of an airport. So for Bangor, for Portland, that's a lot of population.
It's a big chunk of real estate in either of those cities.
Okay. Right. And Augusta as well, right?
So sure.
And is this for any size airport? So even a small airstrip?
There are different classes of airports. So I think it's class C, D, and E. you've got to have the permission. So if it's some tiny airstrip, you may be okay being closer to it.
Class G, yeah.
Class G, right.
Okay.
Here in Portland, you know, 5 miles covers much of the Peninsula.
Okay. And what other regulations should one consider? Is that pretty much the big one? Or are there rules about flying your drone over your neighbor's property, for example?
I think Jason, both of these gentlemen would tell you as a matter of prudent drone operation, you shouldn't fly over an area that you don't have permission to fly over. You've got to be 13 years old. You have to register the drone. You can't fly it at night. You shouldn't be flying it over other people. I mean, there are a whole host of regulations like that put out by the FAA that are designed to ensure that the drone is operated in a safe manner that doesn't injure other people or property.
We were talking just a minute ago, though, about how these are not as easy to operate as you might think. What if you fly somewhere you don't have permission by mistake?
Well, it can happen.
I'm sure.
how about if we just say it does happen?
It could happen on purpose or an accident. So, for example, if you're flying and you don't intend to fly somewhere, you could lose signal and the drone could actually drift off of its course. A lot of the times the drone have a return to home feature that will come back. But that can happen where it can unintentionally fly someplace you don't expect it to fly. In that case, I would say if it's someplace or even if it comes down in someone else's property, you definitely want to go let them know. Usually ahead of time, I'll let people know around me. If I'm flying in a specific popular area, I'll let people know ahead of time saying, this is my intentions. Is there any concerns you have if it's, you know, a neighborhood or something like that?
So let's say it's the summertime and you're flying your drone over the Saco River where people are river rafting. What do you do?
First of all, you got to make sure you're not within 5 miles of the airport, which I believe Saco is outside of that range. But
There's a Sanford airport. You got than 5 miles.
I think it is. Yeah. So for situations like that, I usually like to have a buddy system. So when I fly, I have someone with me because there's a lot of other things that can come into play as I'm operating the drone in the sky. My major focus is safety and make sure I am focused on what that drone is doing, make sure it does not leave my line of sight, and make sure it doesn't interact with anything else which could cause an injury or an accident or anything like that. So I will focus on that, and the other person with me will focus on people and other obstacles around us as well. So as Mike will actually talk about, a lot of people are very interested about the drone once it's up in the sky.
Go ahead. Yeah. So is that what you experience?
Yeah, I would experience, for example, we fly over people a lot because we're in residential areas, or we flew all over the city of Portland or Falmouth or whatever. And my experience has been so far one of just curiosity more than anything else. And people think it's kind of cool and they'll just to go back what you were saying, we always fly the drone with more than one person. We try to keep line of sight as a priority. And the other thing that is, there's a height restriction too. So you can program into your drone how high it will go up and how far it will go. So you're always at a point where you're in control to some degree.
Now, is that something that only higher-end drones have?
Was going to mention that because when you start to talk about these less expensive drones, these ones that are $200, $300, I mean, these are designed for really – they're like a selfie stick with blades on it. You know, it's to fly around you and your friends and to be 20 feet in the air. When you start getting to a price of like $1,000, and there's two major manufacturers in that area, maybe three, now you're having software that has, like you had mentioned, return to home. You have collision avoidance. You have waypoints that you can establish. You have face detection for follow me. I mean, there's all these kind of features and built into it that you have to master, of course.
Face detection for follow me.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
Your iPhone has that, you know, when you take a picture. But this thing can see you from 500 feet up, spot you, and you can be in your car driving and it will still follow you. That's pretty amazing.
A selfie stick in the sky.
A selfie stick, you know, oh my gosh, it's astonishing. So I'm wondering, have there been any cases where people have been injured by drones, Mike? Is that not a concern?
I haven't seen a case where someone's been injured. There is a pretty popular YouTube clip out there of a skier. I think he was in Italy, and the drone literally came down right behind him as he was slaloming down the mountain, and just by a fraction of a second. And if that drone had hit him on the head, he certainly would have been injured. So if you look at it on YouTube, it's pretty spectacular because the drone literally smashes into 1,000 pieces.
Well, and the thing is, too, is we're going to say, as I said at the very top of the program, you know, if drones are indeed the popular Christmas item, they're supposed to be a holiday item this year, and we have thousands or millions of new drone operators out there, things are bound to happen.
Oh, I think that's right. Projections, the number of drones in the sky are going to grow exponentially between here and 2020. They have to be registered. You've got to follow the regulations. It's going to be just like everything else. Not everyone's going to do it. And it's just a matter of time before a drone injures a person, injures property, interferes with something like a rescue operation or something like that, where someone ends up getting injured. I totally agree. It's just a matter of time.
I have in front of me an NBC News story from today. Drone has very near miss with Airbus jet near the Shard in London. A drone came within 65 feet of striking a passenger jet near the tallest building in Western Europe. I'm an airline pilot. I don't like drones, I'm guessing.
No way are you going to like a drone. Because when you think about it, planes coming on approach into the jet port are easily, you know, inside of 1,000 feet. Drones can fly 3,000 feet high. So having regulations on that is required. It's just you have to.
How are they enforced, though?
Well, they're not. Even though I can tell you, like DJI, for example, puts into the software a limit that the copter can only go so high, okay? And then it will just – you can override it, and you shouldn't, but you can. But the fact of the matter is it will only go to a certain level and cease to go up. And so that is a safety precaution that's built right into the software. But there's workarounds.
Are we as a society going to have to evolve and change? I mean, is there going to have to be more enforcement and more serious enforcement and real enforcement before a drone does hit a passenger airliner?
I think that's the story of the law, and that's sort of the exciting thing about being a lawyer is that the law evolves with society, maybe a little bit more slowly than we would like it to. But the police departments are going to be and are being trained about how to pay attention to drones and when they do need to enforce something. And that will increase the more that drones are in the sky.
Right now, the FAA is actually evaluating drone detection systems around Denver. This is a current news event that was sent out by the FAA this week. And they're currently utilizing the Denver airport to evaluate the drone, because Denver is actually one of the highest drone usage area in the country, and currently FAA is evaluating that for future regulations and so on.
Such an interesting conversation. We already have to go to a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Quarry Hill in Camden, committed to offering gracious living options for adults 55 and better. Also, Casella, committed to safe, efficient disposal of non-recyclable waste for all 16 Maine counties. Casella, giving resources new life. And Print, a new independent bookstore in Portland's East End, located at 273 Congress Street. Learn more at printbookstore.com.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, the political writer David Frum. He's a prominent conservative who came out for Hillary Clinton, and now he has to face the realities of Washington.
The anxiety I had and have about Donald Trump is, will he follow the basic rules of how American democracy is supposed to work? And those are the things that are in danger in this Trump presidency, and those are the things you have to rally to defend.
David Frum. That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock and Sunday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio. Many of your favorite Maine Public Television and PBS programs are now available to everyone online through our video on demand tool at mainepublic.org. And now, qualified supporters also have access to Passport, which allows extended access to many of the program archives, such as the ability to watch entire series or access past programs that previously may not have been available. Passport is already available to supporters of both Maine Public Television and radio at the $60 a year level or $5 a month. If you're interested in learning more or gaining access to Passport for yourself, visit mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, all you need to know about drones. With me in the studio, Michael Sosnowski is with the Maine Home Connection, a residential brokerage company that uses drones for aerial photography. Mike Bossy is an attorney and team leader for the drone law team at Bernstein Scher. Jason Lavasser is also also works at Bernstein Scher as an IT training specialist. He is a personal drone operator and became involved with drones through his videography. He brings a perspective of a drone consultant and operator to the drone team. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, our email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're joined now on the phone by Josh Trickey, who's chief flight instructor at Southern Maine Aviation. Josh, I understand that you are a flight school, but have added classes for new drone pilots. When did you do this, and what was the decision? Why?
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me. We started in November. We did our first course, and the catalyst for it was the new commercial small UAS operator rule, Part 107, and that was something that we thought we could help present pilots and potential remote pilots, learn a little bit more about the regulation and the airspace and be safer and make the airspace safer for everyone.
And tell us what that rule does. What does it do?
It basically it sets out the restrictions and privileges for remote pilots. So anybody that wants to fly a drone commercially, so to make money or in connection with a business.
And how popular have the classes been?
Pretty popular. We've got almost 10 people signed up. Our next one starts on December 5th, and I think we had 9 in the last one. So, we're working on getting the word out, and it's a new program. So, that's kind of the idea.
And I should note that also UMaine Augusta is offering a drone course for students. This is an expanding part of education, I'm sure. But I want to ask you, Josh, as a flight instructor and somebody who, your other students are pilots, what is the conversation about the balance between drones and airplanes?
I think we're just hoping everybody's going to be responsible and safe, and that's the way we approach our training with all of our students, whether they're remote pilots or manned aircraft pilots. Be safe, be responsible, and look out for yourself and look out for everyone else out there in the airspace.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Josh Trickey. He's chief flight instructor at Southern Maine Aviation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're going to go. We have a Facebook question from Frank. Who needs a license?
Everybody's got to register their drone. The Part 107 certification process, as Josh was just talking about, is if you want to operate your small UAS commercially. And the FAA thinks about the word commercially in a fairly broad manner. So anything that one wants to do where it's going to be connected to a dollar sign. So the fact that someone might be a nonprofit, for instance, wouldn't mean that the operation of a drone wouldn't be commercial.
So if you're a teenager and your neighbor who is a realtor hires you to take a video of a house, do you need a license?
That'd be commercial.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go to the phones now. Chris is calling from Hollowell. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So my family and I were enjoying a sunrise on Cadillac Mountain in Acadia National Park with a few hundred other people. It's very popular. And it was silent. You could hear a pin drop. The sun's coming up. And then, of course, you get this outrageous drone that somebody decides to send out over top to get, I guess, a better perspective and take pictures or something. Absolutely destroyed the scene, brought noise pollution and so forth, and outraged everybody in the park. And so my question is, are there now regulations for national parks or state parks? And if not, will there be, or how can there be regulations that prohibit noise pollution from drones?
Jason, that wasn't you, was it?
That was not me. But I will say that the FAA's overall view is more around safety. And then when we talk, when we get into the state's perspective, they'll actually, I don't know if Mike wants to talk any more about that, but the state regulations and stuff like that. And,
yes.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So, well, Cadillac, I mean, that's Acadia National Park is a no-fly zone. I don't think there's any question.
So that person was breaking the rule.
Absolutely. The one interesting legal question that hasn't been answered is going to be, where is the line in terms of the federal government versus state municipal government? And the FAA has, to Jason's point, if it's about safety, if it's about the federal navigable airspace, the FAA says we control. If it has to do with more local enforcement, the FAA has taken a more hands-off approach and has not said we're going to occupy that legal space as well. So, for instance, state parks, I believe you can fly them in state parks right now, but there wouldn't be anything wrong with the state of Maine saying you're not going to be able to fly them in state parks, or you can fly them in state parks but only during certain times of the day, not on weekends, et cetera. The FAA would not say that a state couldn't pass that state statute.
Could a municipality pass a law? Could the city of Portland or the town of Hollowell say no drones here?
I think probably it hasn't been tested, but I think more likely than not, if a municipality said flat out you cannot operate a drone in our city, that probably gets upheld more times than not. Because it's more restrictive than what the FAA is prescribing, and that normally is okay in terms of preemption.
It's interesting to Chris's point, and I think, Chris, this is a perfect point, because I could see how an enthusiastic drone operator would want to capture sunrise off Cadillac. What do you think is going to happen, Jason? Are wardens at parks going to really have to increase their staffing or change their emphasis to be finding these people who either are breaking the rules or don't know about the rules?
Well, to directly answer his question, my first thought would be to complain to the warden or to whoever the staff that's around there. And this question can also come up about your home. I'm at home and there's a drone going over my house. What can I do? So there's sort of a similar question there. And my first response is to report it. So if it's in some place that you don't think it should be, you should probably just report that first of all. So if you're at a national park, that operator may not be aware, which they should be, but they may not be aware they're flying in a no-fly zone. If they're following the proper protocol, they would have known ahead of time. But if I was a person just enjoying the scenery, I would report that to the whatever the environment is.
So, and if it happens in your neighborhood, would you call your local police department?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. I would probably talk, if I knew who the operator was, I would probably try to talk with that operator firsthand, saying, I would appreciate if you did not fly it over my area or something to that effect. Have a nice civil conversation with that person just to try to make sure everybody's understanding of what we can and cannot do or should not do. And then at that point, I'd probably go to the law enforcement step if need be.
What are the regulations on most of Maine's beaches? Old Orchard Beach.
I mean, people fly kites. They're taking up airspace too. I mean, they may not have an engine on them, but they're definitely—
Or a camera.
Or a camera, but many times they're just as high or higher. In our experience, I mean, we've run into so few people that have been critical of what we're trying to do. And I think the objective is to talk to people first and tell them we're going to be in your neighborhood. And then usually most people are cool with that. They understand what you're trying to do. And if you're going to be responsible, the key is to go ahead and actually act responsible and take care of precautions ahead of time. I don't think we'll ever have a solution for the rogue person who's going to just go and do whatever they want to do. And that's what we have rules and regulations for. I can see a day, though, where there might be some kind of permitting process that happens, and we say, okay, we want to fly over this area between this time, and then people will look and see, okay, we already have two drones operating in that space right then. You know, you can come back at 4 o'clock instead of 1 o'clock. All right?
Sort of the kind of thing a filmmaking crew might have to do in a popular place.
Yeah, that's how I envision it going anyway.
All right. Well, thanks, Chris, for your good question. We're going to move on to Sanford and Tom. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, if you have a drone that keeps coming around your yard and you shoot it out of the air like a slingshot, how much trouble is a homeowner in for doing something like that?
Okay, Mr. Attorney.
So you can't take this as legal advice, unfortunately, but the answer is it depends. There's a reported case out of Kentucky where a guy shot down a drone and was indicted, and the court dismissed the case out of hand without, you know, actually having a full trial. Like so many things in life, it's a matter of degree. And so if the drone is, you know, sort of close to your property but not on your property, and you take it down with a slingshot, that operator is probably going to want you to pay for that drone. If the drone is, you know, outside your bedroom window at night, taping whatever you're doing in your bedroom, then you probably got a better chance with your slingshot. But it depends on where you are. It depends on the exact events that happen. And it depends on the local prosecutor and how they feel about it. Just in different counties here, we have different prosecutors who will prosecute more aggressively for some things rather than others. So unfortunately, the answer to that question is it really does depend on the specific circumstance.
And a similar question from James on Facebook. Considering the likely number of drone sales this Christmas, I'm worried about the neighborhood kid who might be buzzing my house or scaring my livestock. Are you legally able to shoot one down? And again, it depends.
It depends.
And it depends, and the law is evolving, right? So thank you, Tom, for your question. We'll go to Portland and Jessica. Hi, Jessica. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for talking with me. I was wondering about if you guys could talk a little bit more about invasion of privacy. I know you've been touching on it briefly. I'm just worried, I would be one of those critical people, flipping the bird of a drone that's going overhead if I'm, you know, in town doing something and I don't necessarily want my actions on video. And then I also work with a lot of populations who try to not get in photos because of religious reasons. And I feel like this is kind of like a really big step up in that a lot of our life could be recorded without our consent.
Jessica, do you feel differently about drones than you do about the surveillance cameras that are omnipresent in cities and towns around America?
I do, because I feel like, in shops and that kind of thing, I see surveillance cameras being okay. But when I'm in the town park or when I'm sunbathing, when I'm sunbathing naked behind my fence, you know, I think that I'm behind a fence. No one can see me. I would worry about invasion of privacy.
So Jennifer's looking at me again.
You nodded.
Yeah. So the catchphrase, Jessica, is reasonable expectation of privacy. And that goes both to civil law and criminal law. And so you clearly have a higher reasonable expectation of privacy if you are in your fenced-in backyard than you do if you are walking down Congress Street in the middle of the day. And I think this is one of the most interesting areas of law, not just for drones, but for all of the other interconnected devices that we have right now, the Internet of Things. And all of that technology is going to continue to evolve probably more rapidly as we go. And the law and judges and courts are going to have to catch up and decide when there's a Fourth Amendment violation and when there isn't, when you have a reasonable expectation of privacy enough with some new technology that you are allowed to have a civil suit against the offending party, or if as Jennifer was alluding to with surveillance cameras, that you've put yourself into the mall and whatever they tape you doing isn't going to result in a civil action because you're in a public place and people are going to record you. I mean, you're getting recorded on video. We all are, probably far more than any of us imagine.
Well, just take, for example, Google Earth. I mean, at any point in time, now that's not a total video stream, but there's images being taken every second of every day. And if you go to Google Earth, there'll be whatever those random photos are. And there you can see right down to your driveway and what car. You can almost read a license plate today. It's so clear. As a matter of fact, we used to use Google Earth Pro to put together aerial videos before drones existed and take, 1,000 photos from Google Earth and merge them together into a video stream. And you know what? There's people in those videos.
All right. We have to take another break. Jessica, thank you for your good question. We'll be right back.
You make Maine calling possible, as do Freeport Pediatrics. Same-day appointments and block scheduling. All your children can be seen in one visit. 869-4022. And Condo Furniture by Endicott Home, designed for smaller spaces. Celebrating a fall event now through November 18th. Learn more at condofurniture.com. A note for listeners of Maine Public Radio in Southern Maine on WMEA 90.1 FM in Portland. We are operating under low power while WCSH Television works on the tower that we share. We hope the work will be completed today, but there's a chance it will also affect middle-of-the-day daytime listening tomorrow and perhaps even a third day as well. This work is also causing our Maine Public Classical channels in both Portland and Freiburg to be off the air completely. You may be able to hear Maine Public Radio on other FM frequencies, and of course, both stations can be heard online at mainepublic.org. And looking ahead into our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, the Commonwealth Club of California welcomes writer and humorist Lovie Ajayi, bringing up all the touchy subjects you're not supposed to talk about at dinner. She's the executive director of the Red Pump Project, a national HIV/AIDS nonprofit. Again, that's coming up in 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what potential drone buyers and current drone owners should know about these flying machines. With me in the studio, Jason Levasseur is a personal drone operator who became involved with drones through his videography. Michael Sosnowski is with Maine Home Connection, a residential brokerage company based in Portland that uses drones for aerial photography. Mike Bossi is team lead for the drone law team at Bernstein Scher. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You know, a lot of this conversation has been about the potential pitfalls of drones, but they are really cool, aren't they, Jason? And you could get really, I mean, as somebody who spent most of my career in television, I can only imagine some of the incredible perspectives you can get. Tell me some of the ways you've used your drone.
I primarily use mine for videography and photography, as I'm sure Mike has as well. But the technology is so advanced so much in the past 2 years, and just in general in regards to the way it flies and the way it captures your images and all this technology, what you can do with it. But I just love nice, beautiful sunsets over the Maine woods or over a nice Maine landscape. The sunsets and sunrises are just amazing.
I have an article in front of me. Who needs fireworks? Disney announces new Christmas drone show to light up the skies this winter. The entertainment giant is using 300 drones capable of billions of different light combinations. And I guess these fly in sync and make patterns like a marching band might make a pattern in the sky with lights. So we think about them as cameras, but here used as a display, spectacular. I wanted to ask you, Michael, what you can tell us about quality. You said that you edit this yourself.
Correct.
Is it just using a simple, what came on your Mac computer, or
no.
What are you doing? are you using Final Cut Pro?
The thing with drone video is a lot of people who look into it, they'll say it's 4K video. That's like the newest thing, but actually that's already old now. We're into 6K and 8K now, even though not a TV screen or a processor anywhere can handle it. So what we typically do is we'll shoot in 4K and then use a process called downsampling to bring it to 1080p because most computers can't run the 4K. Mm. But the thing that's important is it's one thing to just fly around. It's more organized to think about what it is that you want to try to present. And it really becomes an art form, if you will. Because when we're thinking about a home that we're trying to video, it's about trying to get a certain sense of what it's like to live there. So we try to think about what's it like to drive up, what's it like to relax in the backyard. We're thinking about seeing if we can bring the drone indoors, but we're not quite there yet. But you can set a program to actually get it to move as if it was on a handheld gimbal. But the fact is that to be good commercially, it's one thing to fly, and it's the second thing to be able to edit and put a story together. Right now we use Premiere Pro, which is analogous to, I think you said,
Final Cut
Pro. It takes a lot of experience just to learn how to use that program, and you have to have a lot of processing power to do it. It's not something you're going to just, you can't just run it on your iPhone, for example, and get beautiful images. So all these things, I think, allow for people who are creative to really jump in, roll up their sleeves, and have fun with it.
It's funny. What you said reminds me of one of just the tenets of videography in general, Jason, which is what motivated that shot? Why did you take that shot? Don't just point your camera and take the shot. So.
Well, I would say it's just like photography. I mean, photography is all about a feel of the image. Rather, anybody can point a camera today and shoot a picture that looks pretty good, but it's really your heart that's into it.
Going to Tammy, calling from Charleston. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, go ahead.
Okay, so one of the things I just wanted to mention, I was reading the other day that lifeguards maybe in France or Australia are using drones to drop life-saving devices to swimmers who find themselves in threatening situations, so I thought that was pretty cool. And I guess the last thing, I just thought it was neat that the Foxcroft Academy band wanted to march down in Disney World, and they used a drone to film their band's skills, and that's part of what got them in there. The people, the judges down there just had never seen anything like that, and they were very impressed.
Tammy, do you know if it's possible to have that video on our MPBN Main Calling Facebook page? That would be great.
Great. Sounds good. I'll see what I can do.
Thank you. She brings up a good point, and any of you can take this. That there are all sorts of ways drones are being used for rescue missions, whether she mentioned lifeguards using them to find a swimmer, but you can see how the Coast Guard would be using it, how somebody in a search and rescue operation in maybe up in Mount Washington or the Warden Service could use drones. Jason, you're nodding.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of really cool stuff. I've heard of some really neat unrelated to drone uses for drones that all of a sudden just made a perfect sense for them. For example, a biologist, I want to say it was off Nantucket, is actually using a drone to catch the breaths of whales as they surface. And this is something they've never had the ability to do before. So they're actually getting more information because of a drone that they've never had. So that's just one of the bizarre things you would have never expected to come out of the positive things to come out of drone use.
I know that they're used to inspect pipelines.
Right.
Mike, can you add to the list? What are some ways we might not think about it?
So like all technology can be used for ill or can be used for good, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine that a drone, upon somebody having a heart attack on the street, could locate the nearest outdoor AED and carry it to the injured person so that somebody else could administer the AED. That you probably can do that faster than getting the ambulance there. So I know we've talked about some of the downsides, but there's this whole host of upsides, like these examples that we just talked about, where we can harness this technology to make our society essentially better.
Right. So maybe somebody who's lost in the woods, it could take them some water before the rescuers could get to them.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you think about like Katrina or something like that, where people who are unable to get out of their location, you could at least bring them items they may need to help prolong their health in that situation. Also this morning on the news, Domino's Pizza announced in New Zealand they are now delivering pizzas in New Zealand by drone.
Oh, my gosh. Now, that is the Jetsons. That's amazing.
Yeah. Amazon was talking about that a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. I remember that 60
ago.
Minutes.
Can you, can you imagine that?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. I know. Tammy, thanks so much for your call. We have, let's see, Frank writes on Facebook, most drones record all telemetry for the flights to prove where they've been. Today, satellites from up to 100 miles up can easily see in your backyard. I wouldn't risk my drone or my license. The FAA would call peeping a reckless operation. Thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think that technology is getting better and better with tracking drone use. And I think that the FAA is going to start having that more involved with whatever regulations they put forth in the future as that technology gets better and better. But I guess it's a matter of perspective on satellite versus drone and all that stuff.
Obama signed the Modernization Act in 2012. It took us until now, 2016, to actually have final regulations regulating the use of drones on the federal level. So my mantra is, here we go. You know, we've now gotten ourselves to this place, and I think the next couple of years you're going to see tremendous advances in people being able to see what other people are doing with their drones and whether they're doing it in a legal, responsible, safe manner or not. And you're going to see local and municipal and state-level officials gain much better understandings about when drone operation is illegal and when it's legal and when they need to step in and do something about it.
Jason, what do we know about how many drones there are today in Maine?
Well, actually, in the state of Maine right now, there are 425 registered drone users, but there are actually 1,948 drones in the state of Maine currently being that have currently been registered are in use just in Maine alone.
So that means that there are a lot of people who are breaking the law.
Well, not necessarily breaking the law. They could be hobbyists. Just they've registered their drone and they could just be taking photographs or whatever, or it could be a gift, but they've actually have a drone and they've registered it. So that means that there's just that many drones that have been registered. Now, many people may have drones and not registered it. So that's just what the FAA knows about.
And that's just going to explode after this holiday season,
oh, absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I want to get a quick question in before we go. This is an email from Russell. What are the fines for breaking the law, i.e. within 5 miles of an airport or other fines?
So it's discretionary by the FAA, but it could be multiple thousands of dollars or imprisonment.
Mm. So serious.
Sure. And it's going to be a sliding scale, right? I mean, if somebody innocently does something, goes too close to the airport, really did not understand that they couldn't do it, I expect to see more leniency. You got some drone that's up there flying around that wants to see how close they can get to the aircraft. Expect the FAA to come down or harder on them. We're going to see a lot of that over the next couple of years.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to post the link to beforeyoufly.gov on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. And that's where Jason says there's lots of information. I thank you all for joining us today. This is a really interesting conversation. Mike Bossy, you just heard from the chair of the Construction Practice Group at Bernstein Scher and team leader for the Drone Law Team. He received his JD from the University of Maine. Jason Lavasser is Bernstein Scher's IT training specialist and personal drone operator. Michael Sosnowski is with Maine Home Connection, a residential brokerage company based in Portland that uses drones for aerial photography. John Keimel ran the board today. No, he didn't. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. And today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for our 5th annual Maine Calling Made in Maine gift guide. It is one of our favorite shows. It's a chance to show off some of the fabulous products you can find here in Maine. Check out our Facebook page for some of the products we will be discussing. And if you are a Maine business and want to let our listeners know about good holiday gift ideas, post a photo and a link at facebook.com/maincalling. Again, if you have a website and a great photo and you are a Maine company with a great product, post a photo and a link at facebook.com/maincalling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.